This is the Frank Stewart interview for March 31st, 2007.
Hello?
Yes, hello. This is Anthony Young calling for Frank Stewart, please. Mr. Stewart, I was speaking with Jim Ballou yesterday. I'm working on a book on the history of the Saturn V F1 engine. And he gave me your name. I cannot speak with his brother because he's unable to speak with me.
Right.
And you're probably aware of that. But Jim Ballou did recommend I give you a call, and I wanted to know if you could talk with me a little bit today about your work on the F1 engine program.
I did work on the F1 engine. I was a project manager for most of the life of it.
And that was at Marshall, correct?
Correct.
I hope you could talk with me a little bit today because it's pretty difficult finding veterans who worked on that program, as you can understand.
My memory is a little bit hazy on details, but go ahead.
Okay. What year did you start working out at Marshall Space Flight Center? Do you remember that?
1962.
Okay. Was so you worked out of the engine office under Mr. Ballou, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. What was your experience prior to working on the F1 program? Let me get that information.
I had worked for Chrysler for 4 years here in Huntsville.
I see.
On the missile programs that they had.
Oh, I see, okay.
And mostly it was in support of the NASA areas that after the transfer.
Mm-hmm. That is very similar to the story that Bill Hallisey gave me today. Are you familiar with Bill Hallisey?
Yes, I know him.
Okay. He did much the same thing. He had worked at Chrysler before, in the ABMA, I guess, before joining Marshall Space Flight Center.
Uh-huh.
Did you come to the attention of Mr. Ballou based on your experience? Is that how that worked, that happened?
I knew people who were working in the propulsion area.
Oh, the propulsion laboratory. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we supported that area. Basically, that's what I did 4 years when I was with Chrysler. Before that, I was with North American Aviation on a missile program.
Oh, I see. I guess the Rocketdyne division?
No, I was working in Downey, but it was. It wasn't in propulsion, but it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was on a rocket program.
Okay. Were you interviewed by Mr. Ballou for your position in the engine office?
When I came in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure I was. But I had known him for some time, and I guess he knew me by reputation primarily. I don't recall a formal interview.
Oh, I see. So you were brought in primarily to work on the F1 engine program then?
That's where I was assigned when I came to NASA, yeah.
Okay. In 1962, then, that's when you started working on this.
Uh-huh.
That was about 4 years, I think, at least, into NASA's management of the F1 program, I think. What was the stage of development on the F1 at that time?
It was still in initial development stages.
Mm-hmm.
In some pressurized firings. Well, I guess we didn't have the Edwards activity going at that time because I helped start the work that led to the facilities up there too.
Mm-hmm.
But but it was still pretty initial. It was somewhat later when we did full scale firing.
So you, I guess, were also involved in the. I guess you would have to be involved with the design of the test stands for the F-1 at Marshall, right?
I didn't have anything to do with the design of the F-1 stand at Marshall, no.
I see, okay.
That was done in the laboratory, test laboratory. They were responsible for that.
Oh, I see, all right.
But their work was, you might say, parallel to the work that was done under Rocketdyne contract.
Okay. So you would say that you worked under Mr. Ballou?
Yes, Sonny Maria was the, I don't guess it wasn't a program of projects at that time, it was just an office, you know, F-1 office, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Sonny Maria was a manager when there was only a few, I would say, three or four people, I guess, working at that time.
Okay. So would you say that your title was like program engineer?
Yeah, it was an engineer, in the beginning, first year or two, and then when it was made a formal program, the engine office was not a program office at that time.
I see.
It was just a part of the lab.
Mm-hmm.
What was the name of the S&M Structures and Mechanics Lab, I guess it was in those days.
Oh, yes, okay. Yes, there were like 10 different laboratories at Marshall.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And Ballou was put in charge, and the program office was created later on.
I see.
And we moved out of the laboratory area.
Okay.
It became a formal project at that time. Maria was still the project, was made the project manager then. I don't recall a year.
Okay. I am familiar with Mr. Maria. He spoke with me on my previous book on the Lunar Rover because he was the manager on that program. And he'll be talking with me also on the F-1 program.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly which year. I'd have to look back at my records to see what year I was made the project manager, but probably, I don't know, mid-60s sometime.
I see. Okay.
Before the flight program started or the real development started.
That's right. So what, your duties involved what in terms of the F-1 engine at that time from the Marshall perspective?
Well, mostly in the initial, the early years, before I was a project manager, I really helped put together the contracts for Rocketdyne and helped negotiate them. The contracts that gave Rocketdyne responsibility for development.
I see. I understand that negotiation process is very involved because both Marshall and Rocketdyne have to be pleased with the wording of the contract so it'll be fulfilled.
Yeah, we really, you know, that of course they were so-called contracting officers. They were just, I'd say, the functional that put the stamp on it, really. We people on the technical side really developed and negotiated the thing.
So would you say you were involved in the technical aspects of the contract in terms of how the engine would have to perform and the results and that sort of thing? Because
we put it together, right, and got agreed to it. Chris Rock and I made proposals, but that's correct. We sat down in a room and hammered out all the details, yeah.
What kind of details are you speaking of? Because I want to be able to relate that. Because it went back and forth during negotiation between Rocketdyne and Marshall about how this contract could, what both parties expected. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, it was kind of, at that early stage, it was more or less a general contract defining you know, thrust levels and so forth,
mm-hmm.
general descriptions.
Okay.
And then later on, we had, it was, when we had combustion stability problems during development, we had to go back and add a substantial part to that contract to solve that problem.
Yes. I imagine contracts for engines are written differently if the engine is for a man-rated vehicle as opposed to an unmanned vehicle.
I would assume so, yeah. I don't recall all the details. I worked on
mm-hmm.
a number of the unmanned type vehicles in the early days before they started putting men on them, but yeah, it had to be, it had requirements, but you couldn't,
mm-hmm.
you had goals, but you couldn't have specific requirements on what their liability would be, let me put it that way.
Okay, I understand.
And then later on, we had two contracts. We had a development contract still going, and then we had the production contract when they started building the engines to go into flight.
Okay. What was the, what in terms of hardware, can you tell me what, because Marshall was very involved in an engineering sense with everything having to do with the launch vehicle, whether the stages or the individual engines.
Yeah.
And what I'd like to understand from your viewpoint was what Marshall's activity was in terms of developing the engine, because some people think Rocketdyne did it all, but that's not really true, is it?
No, well, it's not, but Rocketdyne was given the basic responsibility. We furnished facilities both at Edwards and Canoga Park,
mm-hmm.
Santa Susana, for them to, and of course we had people on site monitoring their work too. But the work at Marshall, was primarily to help us put together requirements, and they did parallel testing over in the test lab.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't really developing; they were just verifying, you might say.
I understand.
What
yeah.
Rocketdyne was coming up with, and they were using hardware that Rocketdyne was punishing. Monitoring and making recommendations, of course,
mm-hmm.
from the laboratories. We did, there was some verification going on, like, even the hydraulic actuators and things like that over in the labs.
Okay.
But there was not an independent rocket development program going on at Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
It was primarily verification.
Okay. What was, I assume the combustion instability was the biggest problem with this engine that Marshall had to deal with.
Yeah, it was unique to that size engine. We hadn't seen it in the earlier, like H1 engines and liquid engines.
Mm-hmm.
It was a spinning mode in the injector area.
Mm-hmm.
Combustion stability is really not a good definition, I said, but that's what we called it. But it was a showstopper, you know. If we had to solve it, because
mm-hmm.
it was a rotating chamber up in the inject area.
Okay. Well, I understand that a lot of people became and institutions actually became involved in trying to resolve this. I know, I think Lewis Research Center was involved with the studies.
You know, there was an independent team analyzing and working, but to try to come up with a solution. And they exchanged information with Rocketdyne, so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But Rocketdyne really came up with an idea of using baffles, which solved the basic problem.
Okay.
And then that was tested and proven out by Rocketdyne.
Okay.
both at the, we had injector testing going on at Edwards, and then later on we had engine testing going on too.
Okay. What was, were you, was Marshall involved in any way in having to make recommendations regarding manufacturing of any parts of the engine, or was that strictly Rocketdyne's responsibility?
It was Rocketdyne's responsibility, but we had people in the manufacturing lab that monitored, checked on them and looked over them, but I don't recall. And we had materials people, too, that made.
Mm-hmm, I'm sure.
We had people that were critiquing, let me put it that way.
Okay.
Primarily, people were critiquing rather than doing initial development.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember your witnessing your first full-duration F1 test out at Marshall?
I'm not sure I remember the first one, which year it was.
Mm-hmm. I know, it's been a long time. But it must have been an impressive thing, anyway.
Yeah, I was trying to remember whether the first one I witnessed was at Edwards Air Force Base rather than Marshall, to tell you the truth. I think it was.
Okay. Well, that's just as significant to find out what your impressions were at the engine's first firing if it was out at Edwards.
Well, the sound levels was a main concern, of course.
Yes.
Decibel level. And they were quite high.
Mm-hmm.
We were impressed, of course, with the flame and the noise, et cetera. It was a step up from the previous firings that we had seen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, how long would you say, I guess you were involved with the F1 right up to and including the period where the Saturn started launching?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was involved as project manager on all, I guess, all the flight, manned flights, as I recall. I don't remember exact dates of which flights.
Okay.
I think one of the early manned flights, I can't remember which one it was now, but I remember I was at it. I was at Canova at the Cape Canaveral at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it was that first 150 seconds, which is approximately what we were burnt out, was extremely stressful to me and to the Rocketdyne manager and whoever else was with me, a few of us watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Together. But of course, we'd never flown with a man, and we were really concerned about it.
Yes. Well, that's what all the testing was for. I understand each engine was individually fired, then it was fired in a cluster with the S1C stage.
Yeah.
And then these engines were not disassembled and inspected after that, were they?
No.
They were not
unless. Mm-hmm. Some malfunction or some problem.
So basically, they were shipped, fired and validated to Cape Kennedy Space Center. Once that was done, the bird was ready to go. Is that right?
Yeah. We had firings Mississippi Test Facility.
Oh, I see. Yes. Mm-hmm.
That was a checkout on it.
Because the S1C stage was tested both at Marshall and at Stennis?
Is that, yeah, right.
Okay.
I'm kind of fuzzy on this because I was also involved in the space shuttle cluster too, so.
Oh, I see, okay.
It all kind of runs together in my mind right now.
What kind of, can you relate some of, what was discussed in, like, meetings regarding the F1 engine with the, either individually or with the S1C stage? Were weekly meetings held, and what were they like?
We didn't have weekly meetings. We had independent, the project management responsibility was separate.
Okay.
That was created. In fact, when the Air Force people came in, they set up, they came brought with them the project management concept. And the F1 engine was a separate project from the S1C, although it was incorporated in the S1C. And we even had a separate crew, Rocketdyne crew, doing the work on the engines under our management down at the Cape, too.
Mm-hmm.
We had some jurisdictional concerns with Cape and with other people because stage people would, I don't want you to quote me on this, but they were damaging some of our hardware climbing over it on the engines, and we worked out an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
That completely kept them out of the engine area, okay?
Yeah, right. Okay, I can understand that. It was
those people under the contract that I managed at that time, okay?
Yes.
As well as the ones in Rocketdyne, ones at Edwards.
Okay.
Any change in the engine, went through through our approval, didn't go through S1C. We coordinated with them, and we had liaison, you might say.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we had at that time, they had an interface configuration that was established. It was under formal control. If we made a change on our side, or they made a change on their side.
Okay.
But the Saturn program manager, which was Rudolph back in those days, that was a separate program from the engine program office. We didn't answer to Rudolph, okay?
I see, okay, all right.
I think they like to think they ran everything, but they really didn't.
Okay.
But of course, we all were responsible to the NASA headquarters manager.
Mm-hmm.
Back in those days, General Phillips, I forgot who
that's right. That's
was
right.
Now.
Yes, he was from headquarters.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, within the center, you had a lot of people that thought they were staring all over the center, too, but they weren't. The project manager was responsible. We were responsible for preparing the budget, for sending directions, setting up the requirements for the contract, all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of labs didn't like that. Back in the olden days, the Germans thought they should direct everything.
That's and many of them thought they did, too.
Yeah, sure. They did. But, you know, it was, everybody had everybody had a common goal, and it all came together. Of course, as long as Von Braun was there, he was extremely supportive of projects, and he kept things under control.
Yes. I'm sure he had to be a real a diplomat of sort in terms of, I don't know how many interdepartmental disputes he had to get involved with, because I'm sure there were a lot of questions about who was supposed to do what, who had oversight of what, if it related to what they were working on.
Right. I told you about the Cape, a little bit about it, but I had a problem with them not responding to my directives down there at the Cape. They would delay making changes or doing what I directed them to do.
Yes.
I went down there and talked to the, they had a program, sounding program office down there. I talked to the manager down there and still nothing happened. They had a bunch of guys that were independent, they thought.
Mm-hmm.
So, that time we had, and I guess I don't want to repeat all this later on, but anyway, Von Braun got hold of Devis, who was director of the center down there.
Yes.
Devis put about a dozen of his guys on a plane and flew them up to Marshall, and we sat in a room, and Blue was there, Devis was there, Reese was there, and they listened, and I worked out an agreement, and we were put a written agreement together on what responsibilities were whose and whatever, and got that settled. But Von Braun caused that to happen.
Well, that's a very significant point. People seem to think that really everything, because Apollo was such a success, everything went smoothly, and it didn't. And this is a good example of what was necessary to make sure everybody was on the same page.
Yeah, right.
And understood their response. Everybody understood their responsibilities, but also understanding they had to work with other people and other departments and other programs to make it happen. So
that's right. They wanted, people like to be in control. They want, everybody wants, but like some Air Force guy said, there was, NASA was like 10,000 ants, all of them on the log going down the river and dragging their foot in the water and think they're steering.
That's a great analogy. Well, it wasn't an adversarial relationship, but there were turf wars, I guess you'd call them.
Right. Once we got things clarified, it was, there was no more friction.
Okay.
But if you couldn't get things done, they just stalled. That was it. That was
I see. Thing. Mm-hmm. Who do you remember some of the other people you were working with that were really instrumental on the F1 program?
On the F1?
Yeah.
In the... Well, our main coordinator we had from propulsion was Ron Bledsoe. He was a coordinator at our office, project office.
Okay.
In the F1 office, Richard Brown was a big help to me, particularly in structuring some of the contracts and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
In the labs, Jerry Thompson worked on the combustion stability problem with that, helped with that team that coordinated with Lewis and those other people that put together that review team.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't, he was more involved in G2 than he was F1, but
okay.
He was one of the people, let's see, he's dead now.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think of who. And there were, well, we had representatives from all of the labs that supported us, and I can't, I don't recite the names right now.
Okay. Did you collect any photographs during this period? Not collect, but I mean, over this period, were there any photographs that you kept of the program or the people in the program?
I don't have very many, no.
Okay. Because I'm having difficulty finding personnel-type photos. I mean, they're, even some hardware photos are hard to come across.
Yeah,
but
I've got a few papers and things here. But I tell you what happened. I don't have as much as I have. The models I had and things like that disappeared. But I was made... task team manager for the shuttle engine and when it was conceived.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still officially project manager of F1, but for the last 2 years of the Saturn program, I was really working on the shuttle engine.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a box of some of the material, some of it's shuttle, some of it's F1 engine. I guess you'd have to dig through and see.
Well,
some of the specs drawings in detail of the F1 engine.
Mm-hmm.
Harold Hall, who worked in the engine office, when he was retired
Mm-hmm.
When the F1 engine was closed down, I wasn't actually physically there. I was
right.
In another building.
Yes, uh-huh.
But Harold Hall took a bunch of these books,
mm-hmm.
booklets that Rocketdyne had produced primarily.
Mm-hmm.
And he took them home with him. Some of them, it shows details, design of the engine and things like that. I don't know. He's got a stack of stuff.
Okay.
Place I know right now.
Does he still live in Huntsville?
Yeah, and I don't have his number right.
Well, I wanted to tell you, I'm going to be in Huntsville next week from April 8th through the 16th. And I'll be up there to do research both at Marshall and at the university, and also attend the moon buggy races later in the week.
Yeah, okay.
But if I could, perhaps I could stop by your home sometime during that week when it's convenient, and you could show me this box of photographs and things, and maybe we can go through it and find something that would be useful for the book.
Yeah, okay. I'll dig it out and have it available if you give me a 24-hour notice.
Okay, that'll be great. I'll be sure to give you a call like a week from Sunday or something. And
you might call Harold Hall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
have his. I'll do a phone search for him and because
if you can find it, get back to me. I'll look for it. I have
okay.
it somewhere, but I don't have it handy.
Okay. And you're on Hutchins Avenue, is that right?
That's on Montesino, if you know where that is.
No, I don't. Because it lists you at 3307 Hutchins Avenue.
Yeah. There's a separate little community up just on a little mountain at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Just above Huntsville, on the east side of Huntsville.
Okay.
You come out Governor's Drive. It's all the sign there that says Montesino State Park.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find, once you get here, you can find out where Montesino is.
Okay, I'm sure I'll. When I speak with you again, I'll give
you exact directions.
Okay, that's perfect. All right.
Give me your name again.
My name again is Anthony Young.
Yeah. Now what? What are you doing a book on?
I'm doing research for this book, and the title is Development of the Saturn V F1 Engine.
Oh, okay.
And the publisher is called Springer Praxis. Springer is very famous for its scientific journals and monographs and technical scientific books, and Praxis specializes in aerospace history titles. So they sort of have an affiliate arrangement. And my Lunar Rover book was just published, and it's already come to the attention of Glenn Research Center and some of the other NASA centers because they're starting work on a new rover. And they're very hungry for the history of the rover program, so it's proving very helpful.
Yeah, what's your background, Anthony?
I have a mechanical engineering and industrial design background. And I currently work in the aerospace field, but I've been writing on history subjects for years. The F1 engine is a story that really hasn't been told yet, only in a couple of chapters maybe, but not the...
No, when they put out the history books, they didn't... Some of those things were written up. They didn't interview me or anybody. They apparently talked to the Saturn program people and didn't talk to engine people.
That's very odd.
Well, like I say, I was working. At the time they did some of those, I was over on the shuttle engine, so
mm-hmm.
I wasn't around anyway.
I see. Well, I'm glad I was able to catch you at home today and speak with you and have you answer my questions. I'll go over the material that I've got here. And when I see you, when I'm up in Huntsville, if I have any other questions, I can we can go over that then, but I'm glad you were able to speak with me today.
Yeah, I wish my memory was sharper, but everything kind of runs together over those long years now.
Yes, of course. And,
okay, well, call me when you get, when you want to make an appointment for me. And
okay.
Give me a notice anyway. I might have something, some conflict.
Okay, yes, I'll do that. Again, I'll be in Huntsville between April 8th and April 16th, so I'm sure somewhere...
I plan to be in town then, yeah.
Okay, that's great. I look forward to meeting you then, and I'll give you a call after I get into Huntsville, and then we'll set up a time for me to come over.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Nice talking with you today.
Bye.
Bye-bye.